This is Rick Thomas with Yachting USA, produced by Yachting International Radio. We're back now with Tom Convoy and Niels Vlassen. Niels, nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us. What a pleasure.
Thank you.
So, CEO of Houston Yachts, and Tom and I have been talking about the shipyard and how it's evolved, and I've got to say, it's impressive. You probably know a little history of me. I've been to the shipyard a number of times. I used to manufacture hydraulic aluminum equipment, supplying a lot of shipyards in the Netherlands, and Houston was one of those. And so it was always a pleasure to technically work with the yard from a subcontractor's perspective. It's even more of a pleasure now to be talking to you and Tom in the context of how the shipyard fits into the industry and how it becomes a leader in the industry. And you know, I think it's an inspirational shipyard, too, because it's grown up from, we were talking the cottage industry to a certain extent, just like we had here in the States. And tell us more about the shipyard now and what you're currently doing and your vision about where things are going to go.
Yeah, maybe good to go back to the history of myself at Houston.
Yes, absolutely.
I've joined Houston in 2012 after I've worked 9 years for PwC. And in 2012, I joined as a finance manager. And in 2013, I became the CFO of Houston, which I've done for 11 years. And then last November, I have been transferred to the CEO role, which I'm very happy about.
Right.
And last week, the new CFO started. So that's even more happy for me because 5 months I did two jobs.
You get to pass the baton.
Exactly.
Yeah, nice.
No, and that's great. Great company. Great to be there. And I will be there for many years from now.
Good.
And great to work with Tom.
He's a guy. He's knowledgeable. We've known each other, I don't want to say 36 years.
Yeah.
And Tom is a sales guy, but also with a lot of technical knowledge, which is really helpful in selling boats, that you know what you're selling.
If you're going to sell, and Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, in the world that you work in sales, it's a 80-20 or a 90-10 rule kind of. The, you know, 80 or 90% of the boats are sold by 10 or 20% of the salespeople, right?
Yeah, I think in the size range that we're at, there's a lot of yacht brokers in the world, you know, as we well know. And if you look around, we work a lot with all yacht brokers around the world, the different houses and that.
Yep.
But there's probably 20 guys that really sell the product above, say, 50 meters on a consistent basis. And that's probably with, you know, 10,000 yacht brokers out there. Right. So the air gets a little thinner as you get up here.
Of course. And it comes because to really have the gravitas to do it, you have to understand the fundamentals of what it is to build a boat, run a boat, you know, the whole the big picture. It's complicated.
Yeah.
And until you're into it, it's hard to imagine actually how complicated it is. So I totally get that. Niels, can you talk about where you go in technologically? These boats are changing. I've been on some of the earlier builds. I was at Palm Beach recently, and I was on Bookends, and that's a beautiful boat, by the way. Yeah. And just was curious as to the vision and what you see in the future right now.
Now, we've always been a very innovative company, like the DNA of Frans Heesen, so to say.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Octopussy, the very fast boat going 50 knots. That DNA is still at Heesen, so we always want to be the front runner.
Good.
We were the first shipyard who did a hybrid propulsion yacht. And now we're looking, of course, to the future in sustainability, in fuel, in methanol, all that kind of propulsion we are investigating. And, of course, in designs, we still want to be the front runner. So we're looking to quite some new designs. We did a new design, Grace. It's already published to the market. We're already building it. New 50-meter steel.
Okay.
Steel hull. A pool on the aft deck. Very cool design.
Wow.
And we are building it right now.
Is this a Houston design? It's
Harrison Isegard's design.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic.
Each one of our models, you know, we have a model. Like I say, we have three different models in the 50-meter range, or 499 GT. We have 55, which is 780. 55 to 760, 57 to 780, 1050 at the 60 meter, and a new design we work on at 65 at 1200. So each one of these boats, we have a interior designer and a exterior stylist. And so we walk through, and that group will be attached to that model.
Right.
And they're typically notable in our industry. Andrew Winch, Harrison Isegard, these are UK firms.
Yep.
Bannenberg, UK firm. Luca Dini, Italian, Cristiano Gatto, you know, Novillard and Leonard, you know, we work with Andrew, you know, I said Andrew Winch, but we work with a lot of different designers that gives, you know, a Dutch boat a little bit more pizzazz. And, you know, so it's a great marriage and a great way to bring a boat to market And the benefit is the end user gets, you know, pretty, you know, we in the size range are the upper end. We are the top of the quality, yeah. You know, and as far as.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like you've engineered the primary structure. You've got a boat of specific gross tonnage of size that has been proven that yeah. it has its propulsion yeah. system. And then you build around that to kind of create the semi or fully custom.
Yeah, we have three different models. We'll do a full custom, which we've had some of those projects. We've got a couple of those always going on. I would say that 75% of our production is we build boats on speculation. Most people get into these boats 1 to 1.5 years probably before they are launched or before right. they're delivered. A project of 50 meter or 55 meter goes from, you know, 30 months to 40 months. If you go bigger than that, it goes upwards of 4 years. And
yeah.
So the business model works, and it works because it's a proven design. Everything is tank tested, you know, best naval architects, best designers, aluminum work. We're the foremost in aluminum construction.
Yep.
70% of our product is aluminum. 30% is steel. We have a facility that is as modern can be with, you know, build halls that are actually floating docks. You know, you drive the boat in, you take the water out, you build it all, you know, winter long, because obviously Holland is
cold.
It has tough winters, yep. you know, damp yep, winters. Yep. And so it's a...
And you're in a beautiful town of Oz, too.
It's of course, yeah. 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 I mean, everything in-house, I think that's also yeah. very important. As yeah. from naval architect to engineering, we got a full tower of engineers of 70, yeah. 80 people. The finishing sheds, all the finishing people we have on the payroll. Plus, we have our own
interior. So you can control costs that way, too.
Exactly, cost. But also, looking to interiors, we have our own interior department, which builds all the interiors.
Right, right.
So you can easily control interior. Cost. Sometimes clients have wishes to change stuff when you step in.
Right,
we can easily control that. That's a big asset.
Important, of course. Yeah. I've seen so many projects stumble because of those types of things, you know, and you get deep into it and all of a sudden the project goes out of control because nobody's there paying attention to those types of details.
Yeah.
Is it fair to ask the question, Dutch quality, that's synonymous with high-end yachts for sure.
Yeah.
Haysen, comparable, similar, different models?
I think the answer to that, you know, obviously Fredship has brand recognition more so than Haysen. You know, because just they've been doing it longer, you know, and so you have to give them credit that their brand is, you know, considered by a lot of people top quality. And I think more importantly, there's not a measurable difference in quality when you're building in Northern Europe. Mm-hmm. You've got Ocean Co., you've got Fedship, you've got Amels, you've got Hawkford, you've got Hoistman, you've got Vitters, you've got Mulder, you've got Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
all these yards are using a lot of the same subcontractors. But the boat builder in Holland is probably as good as you're going to find. You know, we have people in the yard that's been there 20 and 30 and 40 yes. years, and
second, third generation,
generational, and it's
father and son working now in the same ship.
That's a beautiful thing,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it works. And you have the same thing in Germany with the bigger yards. I don't think it's an opinion. The best boats in the world are built in Holland and Germany.
Yeah. And also, when we say we deliver at May 25, we deliver exactly on May 25. Not a day later, not a week later, not a month later.
There you go. Exactly. And that's rare as well.
Yeah.
So, if you ever listen to the podcast, you'll hear me talk about something I think is important, at least from my perspective. And I talk about the sacred trinity of the industry. And what I mean by this is if you have a healthy industry, these three elements are healthy. And if any of these three are not, then the industry's got some challenges. Number one is shipyards and shipyard infrastructure. If you don't have a healthy shipyard and infrastructure for shipyards for either new builds or refits, the industry's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is crew. I think if you don't have good, well-trained, teamed crew, well-managed, the whole thing, that becomes a problem, particularly for the third element, which I think is maybe the most important. That's the owners, you know, and I think the owners sometimes get maligned or disrespected. They're not understood as to how truly important they are in the role. But without owners, you don't have a business. So I'll ask the question in supporting these three. Obviously, you've got the shipyard dialed in, and that is so incredible, because Tom and I were talking earlier. We've watched what's happened here in the States. Building boats is not a high margin proposition. Mm-hmm. It's a very low margin proposition. It doesn't take too many mistakes to all of a sudden and realize you're subsidizing a billionaire and no longer making any money. Mm-hmm. But the owner experience, I was talking to Bert Files a few weeks ago. He sat on the show with us and he was talking about a frictionless owner's experience that they're trying to deliver through IGY Marinas and their programs. The concept's kind of interesting. Do you, when you attribute to attracting owners, and I understand a significant number of owners are coming from the North American continent, what is it that brings them to you? What are you bringing to the owner that says, hey, you're valued and we want you?
I think that you have to create an experience, because buying a boat is something you don't need. Okay. You need a car, you need a, you know, you need a house and you need a bed and you need a lot of things. You don't need a boat. So it's something when you're actually purchasing something that is like really not necessary, it's just a real luxury thing.
Yeah.
You got to make that pretty pleasurable. If it starts to become a headache and problematic and, you know, then you lose them. They'll build a boat once and then they'll get out.
Yeah.
And there's a big education process to the difference in boats. And, you know, our kind of best customer has probably been to other builders outside of Northern Europe and coming to us and, you know, and everybody, I think you don't have, it doesn't take a long time to know that everybody wants to get to where you're owning a Dutch or a German boat.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. That's like the pinnacle.
That's right. Know? Absolutely.
And then they come back. We have a lot of clients who come back. They build a first boat. They enjoy the experience and they come back.
There is the money shot. That's when you really know you've got it dialed in.
Yeah. And it's, you know, there's never 100% success. And there's always, you know, there's bumps in the road. But, you know, the process of the build is as important or is important, but the after sales is just as important, if not more important.
I think it's more.
And, you know, out of the, I think we're on our 215th hull now since 1978.
And, wow. Congratulations.
And I think we probably have 60, 70 boats still in service out there floating around. And we continue to support boats. We were on a boat just yesterday. It was built in 2012. And it was actually Franz Haysen's personal boat.
Oh, wow.
It's on its fourth owner. They just did an amazing rehab of it. And it's just looks good. We're supporting that as far as, you know, some of the components that they need. And so we have a big after sales department. We have it here. We have it down in the south of France. We've got probably 20, 22 people at the shipyard. That's all they do is pieces and parts and after sales. We spend an inordinate amount of time after the boat is built taking care of the boat. And that contributes to this whole experience.
Good. I mentioned crew. I want to touch on this before we wrap up. And that is the crew experience. You're seeing the investments in the shipyard infrastructure, see more and more crew amenities to kind of encourage crew to come with their boats to these shipyards and give them a better experience or give them a break when they come off the boat. But while they're on the boat, these big boats get small at sea, you know that.
Yeah.
How much thought and infrastructure goes into the crew accommodations and the ability to create a crew relationship that works with the owners so that you create some level of harmony on the boat? Is that
there's actually two components with the crew. The crew at the shipyard, we accommodate in really nice offices and assist them with whatever their needs are while they're there finishing the build. On right. board the boat, we're kind of guided now by the Maritime Labor Convention, MLC as it's called.
Yeah.
And that dictates the footprint of the crew's quarters. So it's no longer, you know, you're stuffing 10 people in a cubicle. They have a certain footprint that we have to build to.
Right, right.
And, you know, the crew's complex. You have the upper people that are in it, that it's their career, and they take it quite serious.
Yep.
And they are serious. And the crew has become a lot more professional. The training, the schools, everything, the boats are becoming more complex. And then you have the junior crew that are, you know, and on the outside, the inside, they're not career. It's not that they're not career oriented, but there's a good portion of those are doing this because it's an interesting way to get out of, you know, where you're coming from.
See the world.
Yeah. And you're probably not in it for the long haul. So you got two different kind of groups of people, and it's a chemistry too, you know.
Boy. And for the owner, it's so important that you have a good crew. Yesterday, the owner had not the best crew in the world. He didn't enjoy the boat, but now he has a good crew, and he's suddenly really enjoying his boat. So that's so important.
Yeah, crew make it or break it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as a, you know, a guy has bad experience with crew, he's not probably going to stay in it.
Long. No, that's been my experience. Yeah. You know, for 2 years I ran the yacht management company, JMS, here in the States. And that was working with our owners. That was probably one of the biggest asks when we sat down with the owners. You know, how do we retain the crew? Yeah. How do we get a better culture? The interior staff's turning over too frequently. It's not happening at the estate, but it's happening on our boat. You know, how do we fix
different,
that?
It's complex. You put all these people in a small, it still is a small area and they're living in.
Yeah. So true.
What's happening now is there's a lot of more of the commercial, it's rotation. Say you take a big boat, say it's an 80 meter boat and you have 28 crew. So the top 14 are two on, two off.
That's right.
The bottom 14 are three on, one off. If you do that, and we're seeing it come on all the way down to the 50 meter program now, you get good people because, you know, you can't expect somebody 12 months a year to be on this boat working 7 days a week or 5 days a week or whatever it is. It's not realistic.
Yeah. It's not. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And the boat has to be, even when there's not guests on the boat or the owner's not on the boat, this boat is still a functioning piece of machinery that has to be taken care of. You know, it is a yacht is meant to look perfect at all times in very adverse conditions.
That's the understatement. Yeah. So to wrap this up, because again, we talked earlier and I am this podcast and Yachting USA is really about, it's not just the USA piece. That's the title of the organization, the content, but I am a big believer that we have to have a collaborative relationship on both sides of the pond that, you know, it's an international industry we're in and it needs to be a collaborative industry we're in. The U.S. boat building industry is on its butt. It has been. I've been watching it for the last couple of decades. It's tragic. It's real. If you guys had the control of everything, would you be able to turn it around? Is there a turnaround?
Where do we go with this? There's a lot of talk about that. You know, you do have companies like Viking, for example. We have 55 center console builders. We have still have a lot of boat building. The large yacht buildings, such as the Trinities and the Christensens and the Palmer Johnsons and a lot of notable yards, have gone out of business because of one way or the other. A lot got knocked out in 2008 with the financial crisis.
Yeah,
it was brutal. And weren't able to recover. A couple more have been hurt badly over COVID because they've had to let everybody go. And these people went into other industry and you don't get them back.
Yeah, Westport's struggling with that right now.
And so there's a lot of difficulty there. It's very hard to do. To turn and get a labor pool going. Quite honestly, if you were to do it, you would have to kind of take the Heesen business model, and that's building boats on spec.
Yep.
And because if you're sitting there with a piece of paper showing a boat, you got to employ these people that are going to build it. They can't go, you can't sell the boat and go, okay, let's go get some people to do this.
It doesn't work. No.
You know, you have to go. Yeah. And it's pretty common. And then building a yacht is still a complex hand-built thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You can't go to the hardware store and buy this beautiful piece of stainless keeps these things
together. And you're not going to 3D print it.
It's a whole organization. As of now, we are every day, 1,000 people are working at us every day. It's quite a lot. It's a big machine.
It's tough. And I don't see it, you know, getting, that's why Holland is in, you know, where they're at. We have inflation like everybody else, a lot of inflation. I give you an example is that we were selling a boat in 2002, a 499 50 meter thereabouts for $22 million. So that inflation, you know, because there's inflation and prices go up. It just is as a matter of, and that's everything, any industry, any piece, any part. So from 2002 to 2021, our boats went from $22 million to $35 million. And we're in euros, obviously.
Sure.
From 2021, they've gone from €35 million to €45 million. So that's the inflation that everybody's dealing with, has experienced in the last.
So hyperinflation 22 is 10%.
Yeah, exactly.
All over in Europe, in U.S.
Same thing here.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And, you know, there's 7-8 countries that build boats. You know, Italy builds probably the most units. Turkey's right there. You've got the U.K., obviously Holland, Germany, and Taiwan is, you know, kind of has the lock on 80 to 120 kind of stuff. Yeah. But there's, you know, New Zealand used to have great boat building.
And they
got knocked out because of currency.
Yeah.
American boat building got knocked out because of, you know, just not making money.
Yeah.
They didn't all go away because they made too much money and retired.
No, that didn't happen at all, actually. Again, I came from manufacturing and we had the same industry.
Yeah, you know.
By a very small margin.
Yeah, your business was hurt by it because you were the supplier to all these guys.
That's right.
Yeah,
absolutely. And all of a sudden, our market just shrank.
Dramatically.
Yeah, So that's great. Now I'm going to do a roundtable here in another few weeks talking about refit work.
Oh, great.
And I'm going to have some notable people sitting and talking about that. And from my perspective, that may be somewhere where we have some hope. But I don't have to tell you.
There's more than hope. If you look at the refit facilities on just on the East Coast of the United States, and again up in the Pacific Northwest, and even down in San Diego, that has become the business here in North America.
Yeah.
Every boat that's being built, you know, there's still the biggest consumers of these boats from, say, 30 meters to whatever are from North America. And even if they're not from North America, they're, you know, from wherever they are in the world. They're typically doing refits here. We control a lot of the refit business.
Right.
Refit is the margins are better. And every boat, regardless, needs to be worked on, has to be hauled out, has to be painted, has to be, you know, there is...
Maintained and classic flag. Facilities over there. We have been touring a few days now. It's unbelievable if you go from Fort Lauderdale to Palm Beach. It's crazy how much facilities you have over there.
I think the gorilla in the room that people don't like to talk about, though, is you've got a company like Safe Harbor that owns so many of these facilities. Yeah. And then, you know, do you really have a choice about where you do the work? Are there options?
Well, there's some good, some good independents still left. Yeah. You know, Bradford's and Roscioli and Pipe Welders have all gotten together up there, up the New River. You've got Directors, obviously, who's, you know, got a great facility. You've got Dania Cut. You know, you've got RMK down in Miami.
They've got some good investment.
Directors got another facility up in Fort Pierce. You've got stuff up in Jacksonville and Savannah. Well, Savannah's back at the... But yeah, hey, listen, there's good and bad with the consolidation of shipyards. You know, it's become a little bit more with one big company owning. It's not as mom and pop, but it's the evolution again of
our industry. We're growing up. We're becoming big boys.
And it's real.
Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us this morning. I think this is a really insightful conversation. A lot of people that don't know much about Haysen are going to come away from this knowing a whole lot more about the shipyard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, like I said, when you're healthy, the industry's healthy, it's good for everybody. Yeah. So congratulations on your new position, Tom. Congratulations on your career. It's been amazing to watch the ride. And, you know, bless you both. I hope everything goes really well. And I look forward to sitting down sometime in the future for another chat.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right. This has been Rick Thomas, Yachting International Radio's Yachting USA podcast, sitting again with Haysen Yachts. We are going to wrap this up and look forward to our next conversation sometime in the very near future. And until then, I'm out of here.